From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We also need to give parents the tools and the levers and the mechanisms so that they can act as enforcers of good education. They can act as protectors of their kids and kids of other families. I don't think that very many parents think that the system is working well right now, and so we need to have all hands on deck.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Christopher Rufo. Chris is senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, also a conservative journalist and activist working specifically against critical race theory. We'll talk with him about that and how parents can get involved a little bit later on in today's program. But first, this week a new documentary on PBS turned the spotlight on Benjamin Franklin. We in turn tapped one of our Benjamin Franklin experts. It's Associate Professor of Politics Kevin Slack, who has written a book, Benjamin Franklin, Natural Right and the Art of Virtue. Dr. Slack, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Scott. Good to be here.
We want to break our conversation on Benjamin Franklin into a couple of different areas. Today we'll talk about Benjamin Franklin as Enlightenment philosopher. We'll come back at a different time and talk about him as moral lawgiver. And then finally, Benjamin Franklin as statesman. So, Dr. Slack, we begin today with Ben Franklin as Enlightenment philosopher. The Enlightenment is a complex era of philosophical history. How would you situate Franklin as an Enlightenment philosopher?
Well, I think the way that we think of Franklin is first as a philosopher of nature. So as a natural philosopher, he's always associated with his great experiment with lightning. And so he is able to construct a test, right? His hypothesis is that lightning is made up of what he called an electrical fluid. And it was a test that that could be repeated and imitated in Europe and in France and other places. So Franklin, we usually think of in this context of the Enlightenment as a philosopher of nature who contributes to our understanding of the natural world. But also, generally speaking, the focus that he had on sensation and reflection. How is it that we know what we know? Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I think he shares many of the traits of the Enlightenment thinkers. And to clarify, what he's focusing on is this love of truth. And he feels, along with many of the Enlightenment philosophers, that had been derailed by certain speculative systems or metaphysics where you could construct a system based on certain axioms that others might agree with, and you might build an entire system that by definition would have certain answers as true or false, mm-hmm. but it might not correlate with reality, and Franklin wanted to go to nature itself.
In 1726, Franklin writes Journal of a Voyage. What's that about, and how did that help him understand the importance of virtue?
Well, I think you have to understand Franklin's earliest writings, and one of the ones that stands out is his 1725 dissertation on Liberty, Necessity, Pleasure, and Pain, where Franklin, as a young man, had argued against the possibility of virtue altogether. And so by defining virtue as purely altruistic with no self-interest at all, he intended to define it out of existence altogether. And this was a kind of a clever ruse that he thought was good for humans. They could embrace their animal nature, they could appreciate pleasures, and create a better world. The Journal of a Voyage is something he writes in 1726 on his way back from England. And here it is that he reflects on how he lived his life. And when he returns, actually on the ship, he writes this plan of conduct that he says was very important in his life. And he repeats the lessons in the journal, in this Journal of a Voyage that he had learned. One of the first was is that human beings are social creatures, that they have a social nature. And it meant that even if you loved yourself, that others and your relations with others were included in that self-love. And so he challenged this deterministic view that he had previously endorsed as itself being one of these a priori metaphysical systems that wasn't very useful for his life. Second, he asked the question of how he'd be remembered. This really stands out in the Journal of a Voyage, mm-hmm. where he understands that if he is going to be great in life, and he's very ambitious, and he wants to be remembered, that there are certain virtues he must practice to climb in a society Philadelphia.
What kind of an influence would you say that John Locke was on Franklin's thought?
Franklin cites all kinds of philosophers and moral theorists. Locke stands out in several ways. First, Franklin had formed the Junto, which was this group of artisans in Philadelphia that would meet, and they wanted to help each other out in society, right, do favors for one another. But it was also a philosophical and moral society. Franklin later reflected that it was probably the best such society in the colonies. They borrow the rules from Locke's own society, particularly the focus on the love of truth, which would dominate their proceedings. Also, Franklin says as a young man, the age of 15, he'd read Locke's essay. And so Locke's understanding of philosophy is, I think, influential on Franklin. Most importantly, Locke's argument that there were ascending degrees of probability. And what Locke had focused on in the essay was the limits of human knowledge, that we race ahead to posit certain absolute truths, and yet we don't proceed slowly, and therefore we fall into error. That was called the academic philosophy, and that could be separated from the a priori abstractions that were tempting at the time, but also the radical skepticism that Franklin is critical of. In fact, he would adopt the common sense philosophy of the Earl of Shaftesbury. Finally, I would say Locke's social contract, so Franklin's 1749 proposals, actually say we should teach students this social contract so that that they understand their natural rights and their duties.
Talking with Dr. Kevin Slack, Associate Professor of Politics here at Hillsdale, about Benjamin Franklin as Enlightenment philosopher. Is there too much made of Franklin's deism? Why did he struggle with Christian theology?
Franklin writes more on Christian theology than any of the other American founders. He writes a series of treatises, pamphlets in the 1730s. He participates in the Hemphill trial, which was a heresy trial in the Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia. So I'm not sure that he struggles with Christian theology. What he struggles with is Presbyterian theology. Franklin in the autobiography says the problem that he has with the Orthodox Presbyterians is that instead of focusing on how to make human beings moral, they focus on Presbyterian dogma, predestination, these kinds of themes. And then instead of making them better citizens, they would rather have them be good Presbyterians. And so Franklin saw that kind of orthodoxy as being divisive. And so he is going to try to rework some of the teachings of that orthodoxy into a more acceptable form of Christianity. I actually wrote a piece on this. It's online called Benjamin Franklin and the Reasonableness of Christianity. So while Franklin was not a Christian in any normal sense of the word, he's going to try to teach a certain kind of Christianity that he thinks can be acceptable in the society as a whole and make people happy.
So Franklin's work, Articles of Faith, would you describe that as an attempt to create a sort of civil religion?
Well, I think you're referring to the Articles of Belief and Acts of Religion. This was a brief piece that Franklin wrote after his return from London in 1727. He doesn't give that as much weight. It is odd that he mentions this in the autobiography because it's such a strange piece. He does have a certain deistic creed, and I think that is more important. And I think that fills the role that you're referring to as a kind of civil religion. Hmm. But Franklin's pretty clear. What he thinks is he has captured all of the basic tenets of religion as they contribute to human morality. And he thinks that that this list, that this creed, which he advocates for those who would be part of his party of virtue, those who would change society for the better, that he thinks that this list should serve as the measure for various religious teachings. And so, I think there is a kind of civil religion there, and he plays on that idea of being a religious founder throughout his life.
Dr. Kevin Slack, Associate Professor of Politics here at Hillsdale College. His book, Benjamin Franklin, Natural Right and the Art of Virtue, as we discuss Franklin as Enlightenment philosopher. Next time, Franklin as moral lawgiver. Dr. Slack, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks, Scott.
Up next, Christopher Rufo on critical race theory, how parents can find out what's being taught in their kids' schools and then how they can get involved if needed. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out our redesigned website, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. You can find radio affiliates across the country, find the latest episodes, and also click the subscribe button to get an email every time there's a new episode, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Christopher Rufo. You can find more at ChristopherRufo.com. At Real Chris Rufo is his very active Twitter feed as well. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
How would you define your beat? I mean, we know about your work on CRT and now with other forms of indoctrination in schools. How do you define what you do?
You know, it's two questions, really. The first question is, you know, what is my subject matter? What is the domain of investigations that I do? I think broadly it's looking at culture war issues. So culture conflicts, values, institutions, the nexus of all of those themes or topics. And then people ask, well, what are you? What do you do? Are you a journalist? Are you an activist? Are you a policy kind of think tank person? And I think it's fun to kind of bleed around the edges of all these roles and kind of blend them together in a way that suits my own interests, that suits my own strengths, and I don't really worry about it. You know, some people get hung up on those things, but for me, it's just I follow my interests, I follow my instincts, I follow my my skills, and kind of just see where it goes.
People likely have been following for some time now your work on CRT, on critical race theory, on other matters in our schools across the country, and yet we continue to see people try to argue that these things aren't happening. We have so many incidences of things on tape. We have so many incidences of things in documents saying we are teaching these things. This is happening. Disney executives on camera saying we have a secret gay, I can't remember the exact phrase, but a secret gay agenda in some of our shows. How long can opponents or supporters of these things continue to make the argument that they're simply not happening when we all can see it with our own eyes?
Yeah, I mean, we've documented it, substantiated it. It's people saying it in their own words. It's not I'm saying that they're teaching critical race theory or gender ideology. They're saying it very clearly in their own materials. But denial is a powerful force. Many years ago, I read the big, thick Freud book where he talks about his patients. He gives kind of case histories. And one of the things that you learn from that, and then also just life experience and observation, is that denial can take such a strong form. It can persist for so many years in the face of all, if not overwhelming, evidence. And what really requires to break that is some kind of catastrophic incident. Hmm. And I think that in the case of politics, we're fortunate to have mechanisms for inducing the catastrophic incident every 2 to 4 years. And so I think they've tried to deny it. The dam broke a little bit with the election of Glenn Youngkin recently. I think the dam will break even wider in the coming November elections.
You mentioned you need a catastrophic incident. So in the schools, is COVID the catastrophic incident that has helped lead us to see better what's happening, the shutdowns, Zoom classes, the ability for parents to more easily see some things that were happening in classrooms? Is COVID that catastrophic incident?
It seems to be, yeah. I think it absolutely is for exactly those reasons that you mentioned. School shutdowns had a lot of parents wondering, what do the political authorities in charge of the schools really prioritize? And it seemed like they prioritized the interests of their adult teachers union members over the kids and families that they were supposed to be serving. The second interrelated question is, after the death of George Floyd, amidst this COVID crisis, you know, schools seem to prioritize promoting the kind of BLM ideology or critical race ideology over even being open mm-hmm. to families. And at the same time, when you have truly catastrophic learning loss, especially among Black and other minority students, these school districts are kind of issuing these political statements that are totally frivolous compared to the damage that they're actually doing to real life people in their care, under their jurisdiction. And then finally, parents decided, in many cases, we need to try something different. Mm-hmm. You have a huge explosion of homeschooling. You have record enrollment in private and parochial and religious schools. And then you have parents searching for a new model to say, the public schools aren't going to be there when we need them. The public schools are trying to transgress my own values as a parent, as a family, as an individual. And they're violating the will of taxpayers who don't want this stuff being forced on them by bureaucrats. And so we're seeing, in some ways, a kind of tragedy, a kind of cratering of public trust in the public schools. And yet at the same time, we're seeing a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. I know the Hillsdale K-12 charters are seeing kind of explosive demand, can't keep up. And I know that even in my community, we see parents really trying to say, we need to reimagine this. We need to re-envision what can be possible with education. And then I think the last point, and the political point, is we should really be heading towards a system of universal school choice. And I think there's greater support for that than ever.
Yeah. Chris Rufo with us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Find him at ChristopherRufo.com, at RealChrisRufo on Twitter, where you can discover a lot of the work he's done and discoveries that he's made. And so what I thought we'd spend a majority of our conversation on is essentially answering the question, what can we do now? If parents have concerns, if parents just simply don't know, what can be done? So how do parents find out what's being taught in their kids' classrooms? In some districts, is that made public? Is it curriculum published in some areas? How do parents find some of this information out?
There's a kind of scale or a pyramid of things that parents can do. The first and simplest is look in your child's backpack, attend the curriculum night at your school, set up a meeting with the teacher, and kind of ask to see what the materials are being taught. And this is actually very good. The social science literature, which is certainly not a kind of right-wing intellectual discipline, demonstrates very clearly that the parent involvement in kids' education is one of the number one indicators of a successful school community. And so don't feel like you're imposing on the teacher or the school. Parent involvement is actually really good for mm-hmm. everyone. The second thing you can do is, if you're having trouble finding out through those means, you can file public records requests. These are public institutions funded by public dollars, and they're accountable to public scrutiny. Find out exactly what's happening. There are some resources available online if you do a Google search for how to file those records requests in the best way possible. And then the third thing, and what I hope that we're going to see happening more and more this year, is a policy that I've designed called curriculum transparency. It's something that I've done in collaboration with my Manhattan Institute colleagues. We've created these model bills that have now been introduced in more than 20 states that make the law very simple. It would require public schools to post all of their teaching materials online. So with a few clicks of the mouse, parents can see exactly what's being taught in the classroom. And then they can have some enforcement power simply by exposing it to the public, by creating a dialogue between families and teachers and public school administrators, because I believe that parents have a fundamental right to know what's being taught to their kids.
Chris, hold on. We'll come back after the break and talk a bit more about what parents can do in this fight. We're talking with Chris Rufo. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Why choose proven quality sleep from Sleep Number? Because every great day starts the night before. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed is really smart. It senses your movement and automatically adjusts to help keep you both comfortable all night. Plus, it's temperature balancing so you stay cool. It's even smart enough to know exactly how long, how well, and when you slept. Sleep Number takes care of the science. All you have to do is sleep. Save $1,000 on the most popular Sleep Number 360 smart bed, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Did you know staying active can reduce your risk of developing Alzheimer's and dementia by 45%? 2.5 hours of moderate physical activity each week is recommended. Activity for 15 to 20 minutes a day can make a difference. Take a walk, go for a swim, or dance in your living room. For more healthy brain tips and resources on Alzheimer's and dementia, visit ShastaHealthyBrain.com. This message is from Shasta County Health and Human Services, supported by the California Department of Public Health Alzheimer's Disease Program Healthy Brain Initiative.
Reading is already heating up. Book your travel now to the Pacific Northwest with Alaska Airlines and enjoy daily nonstop service from Reading to Seattle. You can enjoy a cool weekend in Seattle or connect with Alaska Airlines to anywhere in the world with the One World Alliance. Dreaming about that Alaskan cruise? Fly direct and sail away. At Alaska Air, they care a lot. Check out great places to travel and book your next trip now at alaskaair.com/Reading.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
We're here with Mortgage Matt from Megastar Financial here in Reading. Matt, what if someone has just recently purchased a home or recently financed, like a year ago?
You know, this last year has been insane. A lot of people with the work from home phenomena, there's a lot of people moving here from metropolitan areas, which has, you know, affected the supply and demand of this market. That has really boosted the value of houses. So right now, people are looking to remodel their home or consolidate debt. They're able to do that at a lower cost with a cash out refinance than they ever have in history.
Talk about the value of using a local mortgage company and why Megastar Financial.
The nice thing about us being local is our accessibility. You mean people can meet with us in a safe way, but whatever people are comfortable with. We can do an application process online on our website, or we can do an application together over the phone.
Megastar Financial, America's most trusted mortgage company, located at 920 Hilltop Drive next door to Chuck E. Cheese. Call 999-9000 or get started online at megastarreading.com. NMLS 1162668.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Christopher Rufo. You can find his work on critical race theory, recently exposing the Disney videos, on his website and also on his Twitter feed, at RealChrisRufo or ChristopherRufo.com. Chris, we were just talking about parents and how they're able to find out what's being taught in their kids' schools. For parents who have concerns and want then to begin to push back against radicalism in the classrooms, what do you find is the most effective way of doing so? Do we start small? Do we want to talk to teachers individually? Do we want to go public? Do we want to go to school board meetings? How do you recommend this process begin for parents?
I think that's exactly right. It's a kind of escalation pattern. So If there's something that's concerning, first try to deal with it one-on-one. Bring it to the teacher, as you would do in any other kind of institutional conflict or disagreement. See if you can resolve it easily and directly. Then bring it to the principal or administrators at the school, and then the school board, and then the state legislature. So it really is, I think, best solved at that very decentralized local level. But we also need to give parents the tools and the levers and the mechanisms so that they can act as enforcers of good education. They can act as protectors of their kids and kids of other families. And so I think it's really an all-the-above approach. I don't think that very many parents think that the system is working well right now. And so we need to have all hands on deck. We need to mobilize this parent movement that has emerged very powerfully in the past year and give them the tools that they need to make sure that their kids are being taught in a way that is conducive to educational excellence as the outcome. And in a way that isn't violating their fundamental rights of conscience, of free speech, and against indoctrination.
Generally, do you seem to think that school boards know what's happening in the classrooms in those districts? Are they surprised when parents are bringing this information to them, or are they defensive? And we've seen defensive in a lot of these areas. Do school boards generally know these things that are happening inside their classrooms?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think it really is piece by piece and board by board. There are some very good school boards, but in many cases there are some very complacent school boards. And so what happens with a complacent school board is that the people who really run the show are the teachers' unions, the activists within the public school bureaucracy, and then in many cases, people who operate under so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion that are in actuality just left-wing political activists. And so when the school boards cede authority to those elements within the bureaucracy, they are really doing a disservice to the people that they represent. And so what I've seen as a kind of point of hope across the country is parents saying, are complacent school boards that are enabling this kind of activism and destroying the merit-based, excellence-based education, they need to go. And what we've seen is that school board candidates that run against critical race theory, that run for a merit-based and excellence-based education, are winning in blowout elections. And even in a place that is as far left as it gets, San Francisco, they recently ran a recall election and ejected their woke school board members by 50-60-point margins, because those people were destroying advanced math, destroying advanced education, destroying the merit system. And even parents who are on maybe every other issue, left-wing, kind of dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, they said, you know what, this is a line that we're not going to have you cross. And so I just think that this this movement, this parent movement, is broad. It transcends party identification and political faction. It transcends racial groups. You have a majority of parents from all racial groups that don't want critical race theory. And so the work that has to get done now is to organize, because when you're fighting a teachers union bureaucracy and a machine that controls millions of members, hundreds of millions of dollars, parents need to be able to combat that, and that's going to require getting organized.
Getting organized politically as well. There are midterm elections in 2022. When you look at what happened in Virginia, when you look at the success that Governor Ron DeSantis has had in Florida with the parental rights bill, are these topics that politicians should lean into if they expect to win in November?
Absolutely. The evidence is pretty clear. I mean, look, you know, Glenn Youngkin is running in a purple state, I think in really some ways a blue state, Virginia. He leaned into this and swung his polling by about 16 points in the final stretch of the elections when he made critical race theory the closing theme of his campaign. Ron DeSantis, who won a very narrow election, we often forget how close it was, has leaned into these issues, become a star, and then also it appears from the voter registration data, really swung Florida decisively in his favor. the polling data indicates, again, that on, whether it's on critical race theory or gender ideology in schools, a huge majority of parents oppose both. And so especially if you're in a kind of safe red state, you have really no reason not to lean into this. But even if you're in a purple state or kind of a bluish state, I think that these are not only electoral winners, but this is just the right thing to do. I think that you can present, a political candidate can present him or herself as really an advocate for parents and families, a protector of kids from these really destructive ideologies. And there's really no no limit to that I've seen so far to where it actually starts to that curve starts to bend. And so I think these culture issues matter to people. Listen, you're going to get people more excited, more passionate, more mobilized, more involved by tapping into these issues mm-hmm. rather than capital gains, tax rates, or, you know, corporate governance issues. All of which are important, but if you want to get people where they are, this is what average Americans are thinking about, they're feeling, they're worried about, and I think you need to tap into that energy.
Chris Rufo, if we look at CRT and transgenderism and that indoctrination in the classrooms, those are two major issues we're looking at. Are the fights the same? Are they running on parallel lines? Is there a need for different tactics, different approaches for each of those issues?
Fortunately, no, I don't think so. I think these are kind of two sides of the same coin. They are running in parallel. And I think whether you're looking at the activists on both of those issues, in many cases the same people, but they're using the same tactics. They're using the same institutional powers. And I think that they could be opposed using the same strategies. And It seems like whether you're looking at, and I put it in kind of intellectual terms, critical race theory or queer theory or gender ideology, if you want to call it that, I think parents can be mobilized successfully against both. I think journalists and opinion writers can be digging into exactly what's happening to raise the salience of this issue. And we'll see. Look, I think everyone in the country wants to be tolerant and open-minded and loving towards their neighbors, but what that doesn't mean is that you can have a public school that's supposed to be representing the public force-feeding kids into the idea that they can be deemed an oppressor or oppressed based on their skin color,
mm-hmm.
Or that you know, they can be they can have their fundamental sexual identity changed behind the back of parents, even as young as first, second grade, kindergarten. This strikes me as totally extreme and totally divorced from the basic notions of individual respect, decency, treating people with fairness that I think we all believe in.
Chris Rufo, find out more at ChristopherRufo.com. Follow him on Twitter, too, at RealChrisRufo. Chris, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, we talk with Blake McAllister from Hillsdale's Philosophy Department about the problem of evil and suffering. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
If you have something you'd like to get painted, then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Lucky Miller's Deli and Market has moved to their new location at 2495 Athens Avenue, just north of Crown Motors in the Cypress Square Shopping Center, featuring mouth-watering sandwiches, French dip, Philly, tri-tip, New York steak, tri-nami, a combination of tri-tip and pastrami. Bite into a mouthful of flavor with a peanut butter and jalapeno jelly burger or the jalapeno bacon ranch burger. Lucky Miller's Deli and Market has moved to 2495 Athens Avenue, just north of Crown Motors in the Cypress Square Shopping Center. Our food speaks for itself. Call 530-691-4333. That's 530-691-4333.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 at 1460 AM.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall-winter of 2021 and 22. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Retirement may seem to be in the distant future, or it may suddenly arrive overnight. At Stifel Investments, we are committed to working closely with our clients. Planning tomorrow means understanding the challenges of today. Uncertain markets, rising costs, and longer lifespans. As a financial advisor of 25 years, I'm committed to helping my clients achieve retirement success. Let's get started today. This is Susan Eastman, Stifel Nicholas & Company, 244-7199.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students or alumni or friends of Hillsdale, be sure to check out hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Blake McAllister, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at Hillsdale College. Dr. McAllister, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks, Scott.
We are discussing today a bit of recent research that you've written about on the problem of evil and suffering in relation to philosophy, of course. There's a lot of discussion about perspectives in what you write. How do our perspectives influence the way that we each individually see the world?
One of the things that I try to emphasize is that we don't experience the world in a neutral way, and then interpret its significance. So there's interpretation involved in the very way that we actually experience things. For instance, I might be able to perceive an emotion in my wife in a way that someone else might not be able to. Maybe I can see that she's angry or upset, mm-hmm. and someone else might not be able to pick up on that.
Well, hopefully for your sake, you can.
Well, on my better days, that's right. Well, so what this means then is that our very experiences of the world, the way things seem to us, is affected by our prior beliefs and our mindsets. This means then that one person may experience the world very differently from another person.
So, for example, how would perhaps a Christian's faith affect their perspective?
Yeah, well, so I've argued that part of what it is to have faith is to come to have a particular kind of perspective on the world and mm-hmm. reality, to come to see it more in line with the way that Christian revelation purports it to be. And I think the Bible talks about this happening. For instance, it talks about how people without faith, that their minds are darkened, that they're futile in their thinking, and that they've suppressed the truth in wickedness because of a hardness of heart. And in contrast to that, it describes those people with faith, with the Spirit, as having a renewed mind.
Talking with Dr. Blake McAllister, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at Hillsdale, about the problem of evil and suffering, on which he's done some writing and research. So what would be rational responses, sort of understanding the points we've made thus far, from an atheist, from a theist, when confronted with evil and suffering in the world?
One of the things that I've argued is that there is no such thing as the rational response to evil and suffering. It's going to depend on the perspective that mm-hmm. you're coming from. To give you an example, it's not my example. It comes from a philosopher named Eleanor Stump. She describes Max the Martian, who has no understanding of death, of disease or sickness. Everything's sort of a utopian on his planet. And you show him a video, the inside of a hospital on planet Earth, and he sees the chief surgeon doing all of these what to him seem terrible things mm-hmm. to people, cutting them open, giving them medicines that make them sick and so forth. But he has no conception of life outside of the hospital. He's going to perceive that situation very differently than those of us who have knowledge of disease and illness and medicine, et cetera, are going to view that situation. So all that shows is that what we make of evil is going to depend on the perspective that we have and the assumptions that we're bringing in sort of in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what faith may do is help us to have the right kind of background, the right sorts of assumptions in place, such that when I perceive God's actions or when I perceive the suffering in my own life, I can render an appropriate, more accurate judgment as to their ultimate significance. So part of what having faith may do is help us to discern the answers to certain questions about why we suffer. By trusting in what God reveals to us, we may learn that there are certain purposes to suffering. For instance, that it's used to draw us closer to Him or to sanctify us. But in the end, I don't think that we have all of the answers, and that we shouldn't expect to. That's not something that God has chosen to reveal to us at this point. And what faith can do in these instances is make it rational simply to trust that God will redeem that suffering, even if I don't know how He's going to do it.
Unlike Max the Martian, we enter these situations with bias. Is that something we need to work to combat?
Yes. And philosophy, I think, can help that. Training in critical thinking, as well as just habituating oneself in reflective scrutiny, are certainly valuable tools. I wouldn't be a philosophy professor or a very good one if I didn't think that. But bias, as at least psychologists use the term, isn't always a bad thing. It may be perfectly appropriate to be quote-unquote biased towards the testimony of an expert mm-hmm. over an amateur. And part of what I'm suggesting is that bias, in at least this very general sense, is ineliminable. There is no completely neutral way of viewing reality. The phrase that philosophers often use is, there is no view from nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, the thing to do is to try to ensure that one has the right bias, that we're seeing things in a way that gives us a more accurate picture of reality rather than a less accurate one. So glasses maybe provide a helpful analogy here. Glasses can obscure things if you have the wrong prescription, but they can also clarify things.
Mm-hmm.
They can actually improve your sight. And so the question is, you know, have we met a good optometrist? Are Christians genuinely encountering a God who is correcting their eyesight, allowing them to see things as they truly are, in the case of suffering, but also more generally?
Could one look at all of these perspectives and see a little circular reasoning at work? Is that a complaint?
I see the worry, right? Because let's say that I've decided that the Spirit really is at work in me. He is allowing me to see things as they really are. Well, why have I decided that?
Mm-hmm.
Presumably, it's because that's what my perspective is leading me to say. So I do see the circularity. Alas, it seems that such circularity is to some degree ineliminable again.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, I mean, just take perception. How do you prove that your eyes are reliable? I mean, we could take you to an optometrist and we could do an eye exam. But of course, what you're basically doing there is using perception to confirm the reliability of perception. You look at something and you say, that looks like, you know, an E. And then you get closer and you say, yep, it really is an E. You're just taking the testimony of perception to vouch for the reliability of perception.
Mm-hmm.
And so, by all means, reflect on that perspective. Subject your Christian views to critical scrutiny. Use the critical thinking skills that philosophy can give you. But if on reflection, the perspective of faith stands reliable, if reflection only confirms that this is, in fact, the proper way of viewing things for you, then I think you have to accept that. The rational thing is to stand strong in that faith,
mm-hmm.
Even though acknowledging that to some degree there's not independent verification of that fact.
Final question for Dr. Blake McAllister as we talk about evil, the problem of evil in suffering. How does all of this then inform the relationship between faith and evidence?
It's a good question. First of all, I don't think that we need, and I think it's ahistorical to do so, to think of faith as belief absent evidence, or that is in some way irrational.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, faith does in some way seem to be to go beyond the evidence in some sense. I mean, Hebrews 11 says that faith is of things unseen. So how do we square those two seemingly conflicting ideas about faith? Well, so faith isn't belief beyond the evidence, but it may involve belief beyond the evidence available to those without faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because what faith does on this way of thinking about it, by engendering a certain perspective, is that it actually generates new evidence for the person. So you and the person without faith are not working with the same evidence base. And so your belief may be based on evidence, but to the person without faith, it's going to look like you've made a leap because that evidence is not available to them.
Dr. Blake McAllister, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at Hillsdale College, talking about the problem of evil and suffering. Dr. McAllister, thanks so much for joining us. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Kevin Slack from Hillsdale's Politics Department, telling us about Ben Franklin, the Enlightenment philosopher. We also heard from Christopher Rufo here on Hillsdale's campus as our Pulliam Fellow. And we also heard from Blake McAllister from Hillsdale's Philosophy Department on the problem of evil and suffering. You can hear new episodes every week on this station and also find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, and iHeart. Search for The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Find us on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio or follow us on Facebook. The assistant producer of the show is Nate Esbenshade.
Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
We just don't feel safe. Kids shot by stray bullets, gangs overrunning neighborhoods, children we know dying from drug poisonings, and the politicians supposed to be protecting us side with criminals or just don't care. California's never felt so hopeless.
I'm Nathan Hochman. California is under attack, and I intend to stop it. I've spent years prosecuting criminals. As an assistant U.S. Attorney General and head of a California fraud task force, I locked up violent criminals, drug traffickers, corrupt politicians, and financial predators. As Attorney General, I'll crack down on cartels and gangs, get fentanyl and dangerous narcotics off the streets, lock up violent criminals, and prosecute corruption. My mission always has been and always will be to protect California families.
Nathan Hochman, an Attorney General who will keep us safe.
Paid for by Nathan Hochman for Attorney General 2022.
North State Relief, a nonprofit serving Northern California communities, is raising awareness that there are free financial counseling services available to North State residents, provided by certified counselors at Balance Pro. They offer free HUD certified financial counseling for debt, rental, and mortgage assistance, student loans, and financial counseling for veterans and fire victims. Get advice from the pros at balancepro.org or by calling 1-800-777-PLAN. That's 1-800-777-7526.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Premier Oil Change has been locally owned and operated since we opened in 2006, enjoying long-term relationships with our team members and loyal guests. Many of our team members have worked with us for over 10 years. Many of our certified technicians have logged over 30,000 oil changes, working on hundreds of different vehicle makes and models. In an ever-changing world, we strive to keep up with change with our extensive training program. It's important to the staff at Premier Oil Change that our customers' cars are well taken care of by experienced, well-trained technicians, so you can depend on your vehicle to get you and your family to your destination. Don't forget that you can earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park or our newest location in Anderson across from Roundtable. Remember, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.